You are listening to Radio Albion.
Everyone, welcome to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This, of course, is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is going out on the 24th of May, 2023. I want to thank the famed Grandpa Dan for handling the technical side of this. For the both of us, getting our shows up and on Radio Albion and hence to the public. It saved me an enormous headache. So I want to publicly thank him. And of course, the reason he has to do that is that my dear friend and colleague, Sven Longshanks, has been sent to prison. I was away at the time when I heard it. It came down on the 15th of May, and at least on paper, the sentence is over 2 years. And I can't say that it's an enormous surprise. Obviously, what he's been accused of is so minor that the only reason it could possibly ever be used for a court case is to use him as an example for everybody else. What some people have missed over the last 30 years is that there's been a revolution in the Western world that began in the late 60s and really has only come to fruition at the end of the Cold War. There's always been whispers of this in the past, but given mass media control, which is absolute now, you can have a revolution, you can have a depression, you can have the collapse of an economy and livelihoods, and have no one notice. Sending dissenters to prison is something that so many, especially conservatives, thought was impossible just a few years ago. Conservatives, of course, have said nothing, nor will they. Somehow, despite everything that's happened, they believe that because they're not overtly what the regime calls racist or whatever, I hate even using that word, it's such a simpy name that has no meaning and no purpose other than repression behind it. They believe that because of that, because they condemn someone like David Duke or whoever, that they're safe, despite 30 years of them not being safe. It was almost funny as they were being thrown off of social media for, again, some of the most mild criticisms of the system, screaming and yelling. But of course, when that was happening to people like me, they have nothing to say. They live in fear. They're the right wing, so to speak, of the regime. In the description, I have a list of ways you can support him, and I shouldn't have to even ask, but I don't know what his mental state is. Obviously, the man has done nothing wrong. I'm going to try to go over what they attempted to accuse him of here in a little bit. And I also don't have to tell you that violent crime, the domain mostly of non-whites in Britain and the United States, it goes unpunished. In Canada, there's a whole racial disparities law that if you are diagnosed as a victim of oppression, and therefore the racism that you have to suffer is so overwhelming that you're driven to commit crime, you either don't get sentenced or get sentenced in a much, much weaker kind of a way. We've seen hundreds of examples where recent migrant invaders have either not been arrested or been let go on the some of the most ridiculous of reasons for very serious crimes. And I think this is a means to expose people, those who refuse to talk about this, those who refuse to send money, put money on his books, send him things. It shows you who our people are and who are cowards and phonies. It separates the wheat from the chaff. You know, we talk about this stuff all the time. We talk about it with everything from the new martyrs of the Soviet Revolution, where the exact same pattern of arbitrary imprisonment occurred. We talk about it with the hundreds who have gone to jail throughout Europe and Australia for Holocaust things. But when it happens to someone you're close to personally, it changes everything. It makes it personal. That's a very different sort of opposition. The fact that he was arrested at all, quite violently, I might add. Police are aware that they can do as they please when you're dealing, first of all, with a white man and with someone who is known to be on the right of the spectrum. The political spectrum, so to speak. They could do what they please because no one's going to come to their defense. So everything they can't do to non-whites, they can do to whites. They can get out all of that frustration. For so many years, I mean, decades ago, I always supported the police forces because of what they have to deal with, especially in dealing with non-white violent crime and the fact that non-whites, especially blacks, are so privileged in America and Britain that even their criminality is covered for and enforcement is usually condemned. It's not an accident that both the Soviet and the French revolutionaries emptied the prisons. Remember, you had murderers being released during COVID. Remember that when everyone was being locked down, thank God, something I didn't go along with personally. The corporate Black Lives Matter and other leftist factions were engaging in violent protests. And officially, you had medical organizations saying that, well, we're going to make an exception in their case. They're not subject to the law. Ever since the make-believe nonsense with George Floyd, you have an explosion of crime, which of course goes double because it's only that which is being reported, and no one, you know, makes the connection between those two things where they were going to abolish the police. They realized that was going a bit too far. If you remember, they were talking about having psychiatrists and social workers involved in arresting violent gang members and everything else. And, of course, police departments were crippled, if they weren't already. But it's purely racial. We're not talking about two sides of an argument. There's no white side. There's only factions of the anti-white side. Whites don't have arguments. They usually don't make arguments. Whites are terrified of blacks, especially the black male. I remember years ago coming across the collection of the rap lyrics, especially from the 90s, all with Jewish producers, usually Rick Rubin, in the most violently anti-white, vicious comments in this you know, third grade level rap that they put out, or someone writes for them. And of course they have full freedom of movement. They are a privileged group of people. But there's no point in going to a journalist and telling him you're inconsistent. You can't condemn the pretty much nothing that happened in January 6th, but support openly and even subsidize the violence of 2020, where whole cities and state houses went up in flames, including in Washington, D.C. If they're honest, they're going to say, well, no, of course not. We're on their side. It's, you know, they're not idiots. They know that they're not being, their purpose is not to be objective. The whole point of their existence is to be the controlled media of the regime, of the revolutionaries, that now have taken over every single institution without question. Of course, I've been saying this for 20 years, but 2020 was one of these watershed years that allowed them to start doing this en masse. I recall Edgar Steele. Many of you remember him. I had just spoken to him. We were at a conference together in D.C., and it wasn't that long after that nonsensical, you know, make-believe, he's supposed to have wanted to kill his wife. Something, it's like, you know, them putting heroin in his trunk. It was so laughable. None of it made sense. It wasn't in his handwriting. It was, you know, it was very poorly done, knowing full well that no one's going to come to his defense anyway. They sent him to prison, and they murdered him there. I don't know. He was a perfectly healthy man before then. And that was really the first time I realized that this is going to be the norm. Well, if you have some vestige of you know, the First Amendment remaining in the U.S., well, they'll just do something like that. They just invent a crime and pin it on you. It would be one thing if there was a movement in existence that could actually fight back, but there's none. And because there's none, they can do this with impunity. Now, I don't make arguments about abstract freedom of speech. I've said this before. Legally, of course, sometimes you have no choice if you're in court. But I claim the freedom to do as I please because I'm right, because I'm correct. And in all of these trials, they're show trials. We know that whether it be in Wales or in Idaho or anywhere else, anything that goes before a jury, as was proven in Charlottesville, the jury is not sequestered, and it's made very clear to them that if you don't convict, who knows? The city can go up in flames, especially when there's a legal team that in many cases doesn't do their job, again, because they fear reprisals. And you have Donald Trump having a tough time finding a lawyer because no one wants their practice ruined. The Charlottesville case was on video. There was no question as to the absurdity of the charges, but many of us knew that that doesn't matter. The trial, the show trial that Sven was placed under, and that's all it ever was. It was a foregone conclusion with charges brought by the anti-terrorism unit in regards to a law that's so vague, the potential of insult in this incitement law under the Public Order Act. Can you imagine anything more bizarre? The regime is bringing people over for the sake of destroying public order. They know this. The show trial dealt with many things. It wasn't a short matter. Sven, from everything I've heard, made an excellent showing of himself. Impressively so. people commented about that. But the one thing that didn't come up, that wasn't allowed to come up, was whether or not what he's saying is correct. That's never an issue. In fact, there's a book about the Holocaust trials called Truth Is No Defense. That's not the point. But you have a law so vague under the Public Order Act, this incitement, potential incitement, insult. What counts as an insult? You can't have a law that's that vague. You can now. It can, especially in the feminists brought this about, where it isn't in the objective state of affairs, but the alleged victim's interpretation of things. All this, the sexual harassment nonsense, it has nothing to do, A, with what happens, or B, the intention of the person who's doing it. In a revolutionary turn in jurisprudence, it has to do with the subjective feelings of the, in this case, the woman. And it's the same thing over there. What Sven was accused of was extremely mild by any standard. It was something that someone else said, few things that other people said years ago. That's never, there wasn't even an attempt to, make it associated with any kind of a crime. And there was, of course, no complaint at all. They needed to make an example of somebody. Truth is that Radio Albion, and I've been a big part of this, has become one of the premier highbrow platforms for nationalism. We deal with everything from, God, I just dealt with Sudan, to contemporary issues, economics. We deal with things, this was the case with the Barnes Review too. We deal with issues and things that no one else talks about, really because you don't have the competence in many places. So you have plenty of good specialists out there in different things. But we cover the things that often journalists on our side don't cover or simply can't cover. He was arrested. You have to understand, Sven has health problems. He has back problems, other, substantial ones. He needs a cane. I think that was been in the press. They arrested him in a violent way, forcing him to stand for a long period of time, which caused him great harm. Never quite recovered from that. As the cities fall into utter chaos, as the police either don't function or are completely overwhelmed, whether it be in the UK or America, Northern Europe, no-go areas develop in the cities. This is what the anti-terrorism task force does. It's the same thing in the United States, of course. It's those agencies, as the system collapses, figuring out a way to blame this nefarious white supremacy, even trying to claim that the riots were led by them. You don't need evidence. If you read, and I don't recommend you do this, the if you read the mainstream media treatments of Sven, they simply make everything up. When you know something at a personal level, it gets even worse when you read the media because they're simply inventing things. They don't, and they know that they're not going to have to ever answer for it. The only thing they're going to have to answer for is if they're not harsh enough. They simply invent whatever they need to at the moment. But I started saying that I used to be a strong supporter of the police, white policemen especially, because of the nature of their job and dealing with black privilege every single day. They know exactly what's going on in the street, but at the level of the brass, the police inspectors involved in the arrest of Sven, talked about how disgusting and vile these things are. Of course, he's not listened to a syllable of it, and probably wouldn't understand it if he did. The name-calling, both from the police and the judge himself, was not only unprofessional, but clearly something that was staged for the sake of the public. Of course, the media treatments won't actually mention, whenever there's a racism accusation, no one ever says what was done or what was said or what was thought, because it's rarely what they say it is. But when it comes to the freedom to make these statements, of course, the whole point of freedom of speech, not freedom of expression, is exactly to debate these issues. Well, when the regime has no right to rule and it's ruling over a collapsing system, economically and otherwise, it can't do that. Leftists have no idea what we think, no idea what our arguments are. So when they come across us, we tend to shred them into little pieces, rhetorically speaking. We know their arguments very well, but they don't know ours at all. They've never heard this stuff. And so the police and the judge, using the most vicious language, this is, you know, they live in a sealed-off, censored bubble. They have no access to the most important sources of information on any question we face, economic or otherwise. And when it comes to the regime's priorities, which are purely racial and sexual, as a way to cover over their failures in every other way. The left doesn't talk about economics anymore except symbolically. Their only concern is gender, sexuality, and race. And it doesn't matter how rich they are. That's irrelevant. Membership is all that's required. But these people have never come across anything, Sven said before. There was nothing, you know, they were trying to make the claim here that ideas can be disgusting or vile. No, ideas can only be right or wrong, correct or incorrect, or somewhere in between, but it can't have any, it's such an effeminate way to speak that we can't say something because it's more compassionate not to. That's not in where the whole point of freedom of speech was to allow the marketplace of ideas. These guys can't function in the marketplace of ideas. And over years, of course, they become very soft. Academics are classic examples of this. They're often struck by what we say. They don't have to worry. You know, a leftist, especially a non-white in the academy or anywhere else, doesn't have to worry about anything. They're so privileged. They could say what they want. It could be idiotic. But part of Sven's defense, and this is actually very significant. He had many lines of defense. I helped him formulate some of these. I worried that, of course, truth wasn't really the issue. Of course, we were right, but he still needed a principled defense, a defense which is certainly publishable. He made a great showing of himself, not that it really mattered. But all of these, you know, vague charges, an equally vague, you know, they didn't really have evidence. They just called names. You know, they listened to hours and hours and hours of things, quite mild. But again, having been completely sealed off, these people never heard anything like this. Their shock just came out in, you know, playing up for the cameras, but some of it was genuine. Big part of his defense was that he's not really talking about, or the you know, what other people are talking about on Radio Albion, isn't so much the actions of non-whites or Jews or anybody else. It's the class of white politicians and journalists that allows this to happen. None of this would even be an issue had the regime not deliberately imported a violent invading force and rammed it in the face of everybody and banned any opposition. Well, there's opposition. because of their own policies. Now, the judge in this case, as far as I know, was white. I don't think he was Jewish. I tend to doubt it. He attempted to be fair, but when the cameras were rolling, not that cameras have any role in the courtroom whatsoever, he just let out a level of invective which proved that there was not even an attempt at a fair trial. I've been reading a lot of H.L. Mencken, I want to quote him here, and this comes from his work on democracy. He says, "The ideas of freedom that prevail in the world today," of course, now he's writing in the 20s, "were first formulated by country gentlemen, aided and abetted by poets and philosophers, with occasional help from an eccentric king. One of the most valid of them, that of free speech, was actually given its first support in law by the absolute monarch of modern times, Frederick the Great. When the city mob fights it, it's not for liberty, but for ham and cabbage. When it wins, its first act is to destroy every form of freedom that is not directed wholly to that end. And its second is to butcher all professional libertarians. If Thomas Jefferson had been living in Paris in 1793, he would have made an even narrower escape from the guillotine than Thomas Paine made. The fact is that liberty, in any true sense, is a concept that lies quite beyond the reach of the inferior man's mind." Most of us know that that's absolutely true. Its proof is always unfolding right in front of our eyes. They see it. In the judge's tirade, which, you know, in the U.S. under normal circumstances would certainly be an item in someone's appeal, he never once mentioned what was said. Sven was using only government statistics and just basic deductive logic. There were no theories that were unsupported, no ideas that didn't have a substantial bibliography attached to it. Calling these, you know, vile and disgusting without actually making a connection with what he said. A regime that is doing this, you know, they had the finest crown prosecutors at this. Dozens of officers from the anti-terrorism task force on this case, on one man speaking words into a microphone. A man in a platform that's already banned from everything. All the big social media outlets, with the usual exceptions, you know, Odyssey or Gab. And part of what was vile was the fact that they didn't seem to have any kind of a refutation. Now, I know in David Irving's trial, I've come across this in different parts of the world, there was a factual debate, and in David Irving's case, he destroyed his opposition. I don't know if there was enough self-esteem counselors to put that prosecutor's self-esteem back together again. And Sven was very similar in this respect, but that was not the point. It comes down to what the regime finds revolting, what it feels to be false rather than actually what is. Now, before I go any further, in the description, I have a lot of ways to get in touch with Sven. The givesengo.com supports Sven is a way to financially contribute. And I'm begging you to do this. His real name, of course, I've known this for many years, but it's now out. His name is James Allchurch, A-L-L Church. And his number is the letter A, 5903-EY. Now, if you go to the Swansea Prison, SWANSEA, in Wales. They have a website that explains what to send, what not to send, how you can get in touch with him. And it's Patriotic Alternative. Mark Collett, who is a friend of mine, who I respect greatly, an organization that's actually doing a lot of good work, increasingly large. You know, they have a huge social life. They're doing a lot of extraordinary things. Is the coordinator for the especially for the financial aspect of this. We need to keep money on his books. I don't know what the demographics of a Welsh prison is. I don't know if this is the UK equivalent of minimum security. Obviously, his crimes were anything but violent. He's actually talking about violent crime. And how long he's actually going to stay is anyone's guess. You know, he would serve the entire term if the media attention was on him, but of course they've moved on to other things. I'm asking you also to write him. The address, the Swansea prison, I have in the description. It's 200 Oyster Mouth Road, Swansea, SA13SR. For the sake, really, of keeping his spirits up. You go to prison, everything has been taken from him. I don't know about his housing, his car, paying bills. I have no idea, but I'm going to make sure that he has money for this. This man is a martyr in a true sense of the word, what the Greek word martyr means. The only reason he's in prison is because he frightened the system by dismantling and helping others to dismantle the rotten intellectual edifice of the whole thing. How a handful of us, banned from most public social media outlets, frightens the regime that much that they're going to spend what amounts now to millions of pounds in shutting him up. That's pretty impressive. A system that is firm and secure in power doesn't do things like that. They certainly don't. They're not going to spend the money, the resources. And there's no accident that this occurs as the system is showing every sign of economic and social collapse you can imagine. Especially in Europe, even more so than the U.S. Even mainstream media has had no choice but to talk about the doom and gloom. I mean, economists are useless, but they're not shying away anymore. They may even use the word depression in a financial article, which they're banned from doing. Anyway, as far as the content here. I persuaded Sven years ago to change the name of Radio Aryan to Radio Albion. But even back then, I remember conversations with him where he said, you know, the Aryan isn't, you know, yeah, of course it may be in reference to National Socialism, but primarily it's simply another word for Indo-European. Aryan certainly is a legitimate term when it's descriptive. And of course we changed that. And my argument was, you know, at the time I had a Facebook account and things, I can't send anyone this. Even sympathetic people, if they see the word Aryan, their mind goes into short circuit mode and they won't read it, or they're even scared of looking at it. Sven had gone out of his way to keep thinking, I don't use the harsh language that people use in dealing with other races. I've never done that. I don't feel that way. And it's vulgar and it's childish. And Sven's no different. You got to grow up a little bit, understanding that you're right. You're correct, in other words. and we promote the just solution to problems, and therefore you don't need that kind of language. And it was never meant to be anything other than descriptive. I was brought on in 2016, partially because Sven wanted this to be an increasingly high-level intellectual discussion. Yeah, of course, we have activists, and we talk about that stuff all the time, but that's not the purpose. We go after the fundamentals. The prosecution invented, as always, you know, something that could never work in any other sort of a case, but this cartoonish caricature and exaggeration. There's more intellectual diversity on Radio Albion than there is in any English or American university, by far. Aryan, of course, the Indo-European term for noble, for being honorable. That's what the word Iran, Iranian, and Aryan are very similar terms. He took the name Sven Longshanks. They tried to say that he took it solely for the Edict of Expulsion, which, of course, was never mentioned. They simply, again, invented it. Primarily, he chose that name because he was the first, since you know, pre-Roman times, to bring up the idea of a single Britannia. He was a nationalist, Edward Longshanks, uniting the peoples of Britain under one monarch. I'm in the middle of reading E. Michael Jones's Barren Metal about usury, which is 1,400 pages long. And Jews were expelled largely because they were offering money more cheaply than others, and hence they were taking more money out, and people not understanding at the time, compound interest, over just a few years owed everything to the Jews. They removed the Jews because of the threat of violence against Jews. Jews were expelled from Britain under him because usury was finally banned. He didn't want to continually punish Jews for breaking the law, although in places like Rome and, you know, Florence, canon law didn't really apply to them, but civil law did in Britain. It was a means of protecting them, and of course it never hurt them in any way. He actually permitted a full decade for the Jews that wanted to stay to do something else for a living, even provided the funds to make that happen. But after 10 years, they decided that they were going to leave with this huge international network that never seemed to run out of money. Arrangements were made for a civil and rational transfer of their population to Holland. Now, of course, that's not exactly going to make it into Yahoo News. But some years ago, he also added, many of you have noticed this, the disclaimer, saying that we discuss sensitive subjects here. Keep in mind that freedom of speech somehow applies to the most vile of pornography, including severely violent and very unsafe practices, that doesn't even come up as something to be punished. That's okay. But to, in a calm and rational manner, in fact, going out of our way to talk about this stuff in a calm and rational manner, that is out of the question. But as we were talking about the nature of his defense, it dawned on me that it's precisely because this is a highbrow institution, that it has a strong air. It's kind of like the nationalist version of National Review, Buckley's publication from years ago. Barnes Review is in that same category. even if someone were to complain about something, he tended to take it down. He was going out of his way to be as accommodating as possible, knowing full well what the laws said. The prosecution, of course, cherry-picked what they wanted, usually stuff from many years ago, long since removed from the site, by the way. But no one ever defined what stirring up hate is, either stirring up or hate. These are never defined. They're not defined legally, because if they were, it would never work in this case. The issues that the prosecution brings up has to do with what he calls colloquial language, which isn't really used much anymore. This is years ago. And compared to what we hear elsewhere, it's very mild. Pretty normal in YouTube prior to 2017. And after that, 16, 17, the massive purge of right-wing voices anywhere on Facebook or YouTube or anything either connected to Facebook or Google. The claim is that certain things were insulting or abusive, but no one actually came forth saying that this insulted me terribly. Because if that actually occurred, it would be removed, or at least explained. The initial set of charges, charge one, started off with a discussion of the Rivers of Blood speech, Enoch Powell. Now, I don't know if any, even discussing him somehow could transgress any kind of a law, and the phrase was the quote that the black man will have the whip hand over the whites, and then demonstrating that this happens to be true today. Well, when you have a law that vague, and you have a prosecution that's allowed to use incredibly vague argumentation, the law not really being discussed very much because there is no incitement here. You know, at least in American jurisprudence, a vague law can't be a law because you don't know if you're transgressing it or not. Then they try to, Powell's discussion of self-defense, not so much a bit against non-whites, but the leftists. Now, of course, the left has these military camps all over the place. And no one discussed the fact that the left is the exclusive source of violence on these issues. They know that they're not going to be punished for this, so they could do as they please. He said, I'm talking, Sven said, 1,400 white girls raped in Rotterdam. 1,200 raped in Rochdale by Muslim grooming gangs. Oh, that's true. Stabbings, shootings. Somehow warning about these things causes violence. The criticism is of government policy concerning immigration. Non-whites were not implicated, although of course they should be. But his concern were those who allowed this to happen. Talking about defending yourself from leftists, it's now a crime to advocate defending yourself from criminals. I faced off Antifa personally many times. And all of this is done under the nose of police to the extent that they function at all. I know I mentioned that I used to be supportive of police, but the fact is I can't do this anymore, not with the language that they were using there or in Charlottesville or anywhere else. I don't care if they're playing for the cameras or not. Talking about a race war, the only people talking about a race war are non-whites. We do all we can to avoid it. The very act of pointing out the racial makeup of violent crime in Britain's or America's cities is apparently cause for prosecution. And he uses government statistics. He uses medical reports concerning criminal cases in places like London. Nothing was, you know, concocted. And that was the problem. Talking about Islam being a motive force in some of these grooming gangs, ultimately saying that the cultural norms there are very different. Well, unless this difference in diversity is talked about in a worshipful way, bringing it up is now criminal. And this is brought about and defended, obviously defended by the ruling class. Explaining that may well have sealed his doom, because that's the problem. You're not allowed to talk about this kind of thing. Talking about repatriation, despite the black interest in that, especially in America, in the early 20th century, pointing out that we're no longer equal under the law. Many of you remember when I kind of gave the orthodox point of view on race. And what I said was, initially, I didn't talk about this very much. I wasn't very comfortable with it for a whole bunch of reasons. One of the main ones is that race seems to be too big, too sweeping of a foundation for an argument. But that was at the start of the massive migration invasion, which automatically meant that racial issues and racial categorization was forced down our throat. The regime thinks only in terms of groups. I also made the claim, and this is one that I can't get through to anybody, the notion of insult or incitement is something that's done, you know, someone's on a street corner, and this actually happens with non-whites all the time, someone's on the street corner, and they're screaming things to a mob, making up things to get them to hate somebody or burn down a store or something like that. That's what incitement means in the common mind. Well, that, of course, was already a crime. You didn't need another law for that. Incitement to crime is more or less doing it yourself. But I made the claim, of course, and that whether you want to deal with race or not, you have to, because the regime is forcing you to. And that's the crux of much of what he said. I said elsewhere that when a nation is defeated, it is forced to pay tribute. And white America, white Britain, was politically defeated 40, 50 years ago. When in 2020, black and white leftist looters pillaged Apple stores all over the country, Apple's response was to pledge $100 million for various black nationalist causes. And as I said, suddenly COVID-19 was not considered a problem anymore. The rioters killed people. And as far as I've ever come across, no arrests or prosecutions have been made. But that poor boy in the Charlottesville Charger hoax will sit in jail until the day he dies. Protests are called peaceful by a leftist Jewish revolutionary media, as you're seeing the violence in the background. And that's blamed on white supremacists, who they never name, who they never define it. And keep in mind how significant it is to not to define your terms. A term is used because it evokes or provokes an image in the person who hears it or reads it. That's the point of using these words. That's not necessarily what they mean or how they're used legally, but that's the point of it. You don't have to define terms when the only thing you're really going for is kind of like what advertisers go for. The evocation, the conjuring of an image in the mind of the unreflective. I quoted Mencken before for that very reason. But I also said, as he does, that history is not driven by these people. People with an IQ of 80 don't drive history. But when a nation is defeated, it is forced to pay tribute. The tribute is increasingly financial in white America, white UK. But it also means extraordinary privilege given to those who have been victorious. Black America is privileged like no other race. Never before, whether you're talking about the UK, the USA, never before has a country done so much for a permanently hostile and violence-prone group of people. Never before has even basic cognition been short-circuited in fear, out of fear, for a small group of people who contribute nothing to the national welfare. Blacks, of course, regularly speak of black power. Everything in the mind of the non-white, especially blacks in America, is racial. They think in terms of groups. As I said before, I try to get this through to people, that when we talk about race, we're talking about, let's say, the black connection to crime. We're not talking about an individual. We could be talking to a perfectly honorable black guy sitting across from me. I'm not talking about you. Then people can't tell the difference between a group and an individual. We're talking about an aggregate impact. I have to explain to people that groups and individuals are two different things. We can criticize the actions of Jews in America, but I went to high school and college with many Jewish guys who were still friends. One has nothing to do with the other. The old saw of someone, the old Southern sheriff who said, "Oh, some of my best friends are black." That's coined and used deliberately to obfuscate the issue. That's perfectly consistent. Being opposed to integration on the one hand and having some black personal friends on the other is perfectly consistent because one is a group and the other is an individual. When it comes to things like insulting or whatever the regime language is, hate crime stuff, they confuse criticism of a group with criticism of a member of that group who might happen to be hearing me. Black America speaks in terms of race overwhelmingly. They think in racial terms. I've known many black people over the years. I tend to get along with them very well. They think in racial terms. Whites, of course, can only think in individual terms, which in and of itself is a mental short circuit. Whiteness doesn't exist except as a negative phenomenon. But even there, the black power nonsense comes from white liberals, Jews, whatever. Someone asked me about black privilege. And the fact that black privilege, you could see it in front of your eyes every day, which is why they've created something called white privilege. Most of the people who created this are aware that blacks are highly, highly privileged people, especially if they're accomplished. White America has pumped trillions of dollars into black infrastructure, not just in America, but all over the world. How many times has Haiti been rebuilt only to be immediately destroyed afterwards? White America has permitted its own cities to be destroyed. And you're not allowed to talk about it. White America has lied about black crime for the sake of appeasing this racial mafia. Obviously, in the UK, even mild criticism of non-whites leads the white man to prison under the UK Public Order Act, of all things. JFK in the US enforced affirmative action through executive order in the early 60s. White America, Jews invented the reparations idea. It's even passed now in a few cities in California, hundreds of thousands of dollars per person. Corporations spend billions a year on all-black scholarships, all kinds of development projects. Whites have been driven out of city after city. Blacks have been romanticized beyond reason as cool, handsome, romantic, whatever, without fail, and without exception. Especially after 2020, whites are depicted when they're rarely depicted in commercials, but whites are either ignorant or effeminate or both. And somehow it has made racism the worst crime imaginable without ever actually defining it. Incidents are invented to make whites look bad and to mobilize blacks. There was no truth. Everything from Rodney King to George Floyd, these were mostly invented stories. The truth is far more complicated. It covers over the fact that thousands of whites are killed by non-whites every year. Refusing to prosecute those who burned down its buildings and burned down its cities, but spent a small fortune sending someone like Sven to prison. The notion of financing billions of dollars a month to groups that, on the street, claim to want to destroy them. And the reparations people often forget. 600,000 white men killed in the Civil War, ostensibly to, among other things, free black slaves. Thought crimes used only against whites. Any white man who expresses even mild racial awareness is immediately fired from his job. But somehow, racism exists anyway, subconsciously. Many police are refusing to do their jobs out of fear in non-white areas. I just came across the MCAT, or the scores you need to get into medical school. Blacks are getting into a medical school with extremely low MCAT scores, proving that the regime will risk people's lives for the sake of promoting the idea of a black doctor. Whites elected what they call a black man, a half black man, president of the U.S. based exclusively on his color. White women especially. After 5 decades of endless anti-discrimination laws, using the army in some cases, and even constitutional amendments, somehow systematic racism exists. Whites fear blacks. They'll bend over backwards to their demands. Blacks, I think, are quite aware of this. God knows how many whites have been destroyed, had their careers destroyed for opposing this agenda, or even mentioning it. We all know the Michael Richards case, the Seinfeld man who played Kramer. No negative descriptions of blacks in film or TV are permitted. Black History Month is largely a litany of stories that the regime invents of black achievement. They invented the first open-heart surgery, invented electricity, you know, the most nonsensical things. Not one of them is actually true. This means black America has full freedom of speech, knowing full well that they'll never be held accountable for what they say. Never before has an entire race of people been subject to diversity training and open brainwashing against themselves, and will turn on anybody who questions it, let alone rejects it. Never have the builders of a country been made to hate themselves to the point of genocide. And that's, you know, these are just a handful of ways, and I'm understating the case, how non-whites are privileged. The very fact that Sven today sits in prison because he has mildly criticized the political establishment for their racial policies puts non-whites in a position of privilege and power that only post-modernity could even conceive of. I can't imagine of an ancient or a medieval state doing more for hostile minorities than, you know, it's inconceivable over the years. How much money has been spent? I mean, centuries ago, it would have been social suicide. And what has America received for this misguided investment? How have whites benefited? And who's really behind it all? The term racist, as we all know, has no functional meaning, and it's meant to be that way. Black privilege implies that they could never be racist, whatever that is, no matter how violent they are towards whites, based exclusively on skin color. Of course, no one's ever really talking about skin color with non-whites. It's a racial designation. It's a group of people. Blacks can scream racism or have someone else do it for them when an outcome doesn't suit them, which increasingly doesn't happen. And successful, well-off blacks talk about institutionalized racism because it makes them seem heroic due to all the obstacles that they had to overcome to achieve their success. Of course, we all know none of them will trade their racial identification for any other. They're well aware that it's largely responsible for what they have. Blacks build race-specific institutions, usually with tax dollars. And can you imagine whites doing it? I mean, this is all kind of old news. I know you know this. But the psychological effort to brainwash someone into hating themselves for make-believe history is something that is unknown prior to this. Sven, myself, everyone who's responsible among nationalists uses official statistics. And we know official statistics will understate black criminality. Blacks with any kind of educational achievement are privileged beyond belief. It's an automatic career path for them. And they're told that blacks are in prison because they're black and for no other reason. Whites would rather be mugged than appear racist. So much of this is old news to many of you. We know that there's a Judaic ruling class, especially in the banking, political establishment. Every administration since Lyndon Johnson has been substantially Jewish. But as we also know, a mixed race, mixed ethnic, mixed religious, mixed linguistic society is one who, by definition, has no identity. But any kind of rebellion, uprising against things like globalization or mass immigration, it requires a firm sense of identity to become coherent. Mixing races, religions, ethnic identifications destroys the primary ground for actual revolt. Without an identity, there's no reason to risk your life for another. If you're taught to hate white people, why are you going to risk your life for one? No trust can exist in a society like this. The regime banks on this. It banks on public ignorance so that when it does something to someone like Sven or someone like Edgar Steele, no one's going to come to his defense because everyone is terrified. If you're in a position such that you can't be an activist, whether it be out in the street or whatever it might be, many of you are not in that position. Well, here's your chance. An extraordinary middle finger to the regime is to assist Sven, put money on his books, subscribe to my Patreon account. A lot of my money's going to him anyway. But the truth of the matter is they're aware, the left, Judaism, is aware that any society requires a community. It is a community, in fact, that speaks a single language in the broad sense of the term. Anyway, I think I've made my point here. It's extremely depressing. We know what kind of society we live within, what we're forced to do. I need my friends to stay strong, Sven to stay strong. Please do what you can. Write him a letter. Put a few pounds on his account. He needs it. He has sacrificed himself, his freedom, in the most extreme way possible, for the sake of our people and the sake of our struggle. I'm proud to be a close friend of his. And he is a man of honor. He is a man of trust. He is some of the best sort of person that our people have created. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.